they left. The Chinese suggested then that they each be given a room to work on with their artistry, two rooms facing each other and divided by a curtain. The Chinese asked the king for 100 colors, all the variations, and each morning they came to where the dyes were kept and took them all. The Greeks took no colors. They're not part of our work. They went to their room and began cleaning and polishing the walls. All day, every day, they made those walls as pure and clear as an open sky. There is a way that leaks from all colors. Know that the magnificent variety of the clouds and the weather comes from the total simplicity of the sun and the moon. The Chinese finished, and they were so happy. They beat the drum in the joy of completion. The king entered their room, astonished by the gorgeous colors and detail. The Greeks then pulled the curtain dividing the room. The Chinese figures and images shimmeringly reflected on the clear Greek wall. They lived there, even more beautifully, and always changing in the light. The Greek art is the Sufi way. They don't study books of philosophical thought. They make their loving clearer and clearer. No wanting, no anger. In that purity, they receive and reflect the images of every moment, from here, from the stars, from the void. They take them in as though they were seeing with the lighted clarity that sees death.
Thank you very much. Okay, again, the story is very clear, and this is the story that tells you very early about the way in which, or through which, Sufis actually try to get the knowledge and their understanding of the world. Actually, according to their classification, there are two types of knowledge. The knowledge that you go about it, and the knowledge that it comes to you. The knowledge that you go to it, or you seek it, and the knowledge that seeks you. So there are two varieties, if you like, of knowledge, but they are actually two genres, if you like, and they are not two types or subtypes of the same genre. The knowledge that you seek it, you go about it, and this is the knowledge that we do it. I mean, in universities, in classrooms, in the schools, and so on and so forth, through books, through teachers, and so on, we go to learn from them, to read books, to study in the libraries, everywhere. This is a knowledge that we follow it, and we try to capture it, to buy it, if you like. But there is a kind of knowledge that actually seeks us and comes after us. And that is a knowledge Sufis are after all. And their way of knowing things is very different from the ordinary conventional way of knowing and understanding. Here actually Rumi gives us a hint as to how it works, the mechanism or the dynamism of that knowledge. You will find it here. This is through the purification of the heart. They think, and actually they tell us, that there is such a system, if you like, such a mechanism in the world, that if you make yourself empty of your vices, if you purify yourself, the truth rushes to you and fills you, you see, rather than you try to fill your mind with the truth or the facts or things. So there are two different ways of knowing, of capturing the truth. In one sense, in one way, you go about truth, and of course you capture it only partially. as we said, and as we saw it in the story of the elephant, okay? You capture it, you find it, but very partially, very incomplete, and that is the way of philosophers and scientists and so on. But now, the way that the Sufi chooses is the Greek way, as you saw. Chinese are the scientists and the philosophers. They need color, they are good painters, of course, and they work every day in order to paint the world. But the Greek are the Sufis on the other side of the room, on the facing wall. So they are just making the wall, I mean, they polish it, they make it like a mirror. Now, the truth over there reflects itself in the polished mirror-like wall on the other side. So it is your choice now. You would like to be a Chinese or a Greek. You would like to be a scientist or a Sufi. You would like to go to the truth, or you would like the truth to come to you. So there are both ways. And the purification, of course, is much more difficult than careful observation, than experimentation, that careful argumentation, and so on and so forth. Indeed, this is one of the main Rumi's teachings, that it is not enough to know the truth. It is not enough for the objective truth to be there. It is important for the knower, for the scholar, for the thinker to be impartial, to be free. The freedom of the spirit, of the soul of the thinker is much more important than the objectivity of the rules, of the methodology, of the science, and all that. You see? This is, and because of that, they think, Rumi and others, that ethics or morality comes first. Because you may be a good scientist, you may not be an impartial person. You may have your own self-interest. You might have your selfishness and many other vices in you which prevents you from understanding the reality or from selling it and describing it to others. So ethicality, morality, purity of the soul, purity of the mind, always first. A very good example actually gives us, that is very suitable for the month of Ramadan in which now we are. You know that in Suhoor, I mean, before the dawn, the people who would like to fast, I mean, get up early and eat something, and then when the dawn is there, so they have to stop eating and eating and so on. Now, Rumi says there are people who would like to fast, but they close to the dawn in order to have more time to eat and to drink. Okay? They close their windows. They close their windows. They close their eyes. That's exactly what he says. He says the scientist is the man who takes food and drink into him. But then, if he's not impartial, if he's not pious enough, if he's not purified enough, he will close the doors to the sun. He will close his eyes to the sun of truth. Though he knows a lot, but he's not truthful to the truth. He's not faithful to the truth. You see what he means? Let me read you the poem. چون طمع مره من شمس را پنهان کند نه عجب گر پشت بر برهان کند. What is طمع? Avarice? Greediness? Yeah, greed. Yes. Now, greed makes you conceal the sun from yourself and not to see it and to continue drinking and eating. Okay? Now, the same greed will conceal the sun of truth from you as well. Okay? So, that is the message that Rumi gives us. So, piety, purity of the soul and the mind always comes first. And the very purity of soul and mind actually prepares you to capture and to receive the truth much more easily than from other ways. So the Greek actually here are those who think that purifying the soul and the heart is the main source of understanding the reality, and the Chinese are, of course, the symbol of the scientists and so on. So altogether, I think now we have got a clear picture of, if you like, the epistemology of Rumi. On the one hand, language has got its own shortcomings, certainty is unattainable, and the intellect always is partial, and it cannot be impartial. And for all these reasons, actually a kind of, for those who are eager to understand better and clearer the reality, they have to purify their soul, their mind, and this purification, of course, is not easily attainable. One has to be careful and watchful on him or herself. And there are, of course, ways to do that. Eating less, drinking less, sleeping less, and so on and so forth, in order to purify and to prepare yourself to receive the higher knowledge, if you like, and the certainty, and of course, to even to become prone for the love of God. This much for the whole epistemology. But as far as the theology and philosophy is concerned, of course, Rumi does not like these disciplines as well. First of all, as I said, because they are based, theology, according to Rumi, is there in order to settle disputes of the unbelievers. Okay. Therefore, it is a secondary, a derivative discipline. If there were no disputants, if there were no unbelievers, there would be no need for theology. Therefore, theology is not an original, a genuine science. It is there in order to combat the believers, infidels. So it's not very original. It is secondary, and it is there in order to respond to the misgivings of the infidels, of the theologians, of the other sects and religions, and so on. Philosophy, again, according to him, is a system of suppositions. And the main option of Rumi philosophy is a hindrance, something which prevents you from perplexity. That's exactly what he says. It is a system which is devised in order to eradicate perplexity. To eradicate perplexity. As sabab dani shabat kam hegratat. You think that you know the cause of everything, the definition of everything, the workings of everything, the dynamism, mechanism of the unity, how the world has been created, how the things work in this world, what are the causes of every phenomenon, and so on and so forth. And that actually gives you the idea or the feeling that perhaps everything is under your control, everything is in your hand, and perhaps you are a second God. So that, as I said, according to him, eradicates perplexity, which is the main element or the main commodity that the contemplatives actually offer us. So, and then of course, philosophy, according to Rumi, is produces false and artificial questions in order to get its business going. So, for philosophers, it is an incomplete all, and they want it to be incomplete, because the moment that the philosophy is complete, solve every problem, so it is finished. You have to produce, create false and artificial problems in order to get it going. And he gives us a very good example, a very good allegory of this. He says philosophy is like a bag, an empty bag, a thousands of ties and knots on the bag. Now you as a philosopher try to undo the knots, one after the other, one after the other, and perhaps you enter a debate or a quarrel with your competitors and so on in undoing all these knots. But then, after undoing all of them, you will be left with an empty bag. So the whole philosophy the whole philosophy is just undoing, I mean, creating knots after knots, ties after, undoing them. A thousand of knots. So that's the system or the science of knots and undoing knots. But knots on what? On an empty bag, rather than on a full bag. That if you undo all of them, you actually get a treasury or something, but that's not the case. عقده سخت است بر کیسه تهی, according to Rumi. It's a very, very aligned knot or whatever on an empty bag. So be careful. According to Rumi, after all the whole philosophy, in this he is under the influence of Ghazali, of course. He was the arch enemy of philosophy and philosophers, no doubt about it, and he wrote a lot about philosophy and against philosophy. And he was, of course, again under the influence of the school of Ash'arites, that was also against philosophy and philosophers, and he has got his own reasons, of course. And his main approach, of course, is through this love business, rather than the philosophy arguments against philosophy. Having said all that, what Rumi actually says to us, his main message, should not be misinterpreted. He says the love is not the lot of everybody. When you reach the level of love, of course you look down at the intellect and reason and so on. But if you have not reached that level and you are still in the level of the intellect, you have to take it seriously. Because otherwise, I mean, if there is neither reason nor love, we will be left with stupidity. That is what he says. Exactly. So there are three levels of understanding, or of epistemological levels, if you like. Stupidity, then level of intellect, and then love. So if you do not ascend to the level of love, you will lead to the level of stupidity, unless you stay in the level of intellect. You see, he is very clear on this. Very clear. He is not going to sell out intellect to stupidity. No, that is not his mission. That's not his message. So let us be careful in understanding him. عقل دشنامم دهد من راز. If the reason curses me, I am satisfied, because it is the reason that is cursing me, rather than the stupidity. زان که فیضی دارد از فیاد دشمن ار حلوا نهد اندر لبم من از آن احمر. If a stupid man puts sweet in my mouth, it makes me sick, because stupidity that is giving me sweet things, I do not like that. But if a rational being, if a wise man curses me, slanders me, still I am happy, because that comes from a rational person. Knowledge and stupidity, they are polar concepts, and as I said, you do not end to the ends of love or loverhood, then inevitably, if you do not keep your stand, forbid, to the level of ignorance, stupidity, and on. So that is the message of the Rumi, but of course his criticism against philosophy is altogether a different issue, and I think discussed in modern epistemology, because he has got a lot of things to say about this. So I think this much is okay for this time, and the next time I think I'm going to talk about the death and life, of course, as two polar concepts, and that will be the end of our endeavor, the death of our endeavor, maybe. Okay.
Just for now.
For now, yes, of course, everything is tentative in this world. I mean. Thank you very much. So.
Thank you, Professor Sarush, for your comments on the limits of language and the relative futility of philosophy, apparently. But at this time, we do have an opportunity for several questions, if there are any from the audience. Yes.
Possibility.
Yes, I mean, this is the case according to Rumi. I mean, in the world of philosophy, it's always the case. I mean, each philosopher is doing the same. He is touching the elephant from his own point of view, and he's describing the elephant on the basis of his hasanat.